I'm Eric Whitney with Montana News. 10,000 square miles. That's roughly how much public land in Montana the U.S. Forest Service is currently making new plans for. Three national forests, the Flathead, Helena Lewis and Clark, and the Custer Gallatin, are all writing their basic governing documents that lay out what can and can't happen, and where, in their vast territories for years to come. In January, the Helena Lewis and Clark National Forest is holding a series of public input meetings on their new forest plan. All this new planning is happening under new forest planning rules. University of Montana Professor of Natural Resource Policy Martin Nye is on a national advisory committee about those rules. He joins us now to talk about how important the forest plans are.
There's some common things found in most plans, such as the designation of particular management areas and zones, lines on maps, basically. And in each one of those management areas, there are particular rules about how they must be managed over the next 15 to 20 years.
I know at the end of this month, the Helena Lewis and Clark National Forest is going to be holding a series of public meetings for people to have input into the planning process. People are probably going to wonder, is it worth their time to go and spend a lot of time learning about the forest plan, giving input to the forest plan?
I believe so. Plans in Montana are being written pursuant to this new federal regulation that's called the 2012 Planning Rule. And I'm a member of the National Advisory Committee for implementing that rule. It's a really underappreciated achievement by the Obama administration that has a lot of potential. And one of the anchor points of that whole rule is having more meaningful public engagement and collaboration. And so I think public participation is absolutely essential.
How likely is it for one particular interest group to be able to capture the forest planning process and advance their agenda, maybe at the expense of others?
Planning can be an ugly process. And it's at the plan level where we really see what multiple use looks like at the individual national forest level. And there's no getting around the trade-offs that have to be made in national forest management. The agency has a very open-ended, famous multiple use mandate that provides the agency quite a bit of discretion. But we've placed the National Forest Management Act on top of multiple use, and it provides some additional constraints for the agency. And the 2012 rule does the same, telling the Forest Service what it must consider along the way in preparing these plans. But there's no getting around the politics of planning. And so you're going to have the various interest groups trying to get more wilderness or more timber supply or more grazing or more quiet recreation or more motorized use. That's the nature of multiple use management. The hope in this go-round is that we've learned some lessons since we first prepared those first-generation plans in the 1980s, and we can do this in a more collaborative way, in a more constructive way, utilize best available science.
You talked about the multiple-use mandate that the Forest Service has. If the agency has that mandate, why is it important for people to participate?
Well, what's that saying? You're either at the table or you're on the menu. So my recommendation would be at the table. I think folks that are involved in national forest management recognize the integrated nature of all of these issues. There definitely will be constituencies that just focus on the motorized issue and just focus on, say, recommended wilderness, and that's fine. But I think there'll be others from rural communities to other environmental advocates that'll take a broader approach and look at how all of these various parts fit together.
These planning meetings for these specific forest plans are held in communities very close to the national forests. What's to keep the local interests from dominating management of the forest when those local interests might be at odds with the goals or aspirations of the greater American public?
Well, thankfully, these are federal lands and managed in the national interest, and our environmental laws make that very clear. At the same time, our environmental laws provide a really constructive opportunity for states and counties and tribal governments to participate. And in my view, that provides a very constructive tension between balancing local and national interests. But we have national interest groups that are at the table, and I have no doubt that that national interest will be represented.
Do you think that every one of these is going to be at least administratively appealed, if not litigated in the federal courts?
One, the new 2012 planning rule has a new objections process. So it allows for an objection for those groups that have participated since the very early stages. It's going to be very hard for any group that has not participated in planning to have any voice in the plan whatsoever because of the new 2012 regulation.
But there's the judicial process afterwards, so
plans themselves cannot be litigated, and that's a misconception. Because of various Supreme Court decisions, you can't litigate the plan itself. You have to wait until the project that's implementing the plan is on the ground before litigation happens.
Tell me about how the new forest planning process is different and better than the old one.
Plans took a long time to write, and they were very expensive. And there was also a concern that those old regulations made it much more difficult for the agency to adapt to new information and contexts and emerging science. And it's been a really tough sledding, you know, to get new forest planning regulations. I mean, Clinton was not successful in doing so in 2000. The Bush administration tried in 2005 and 2007, 08. Those were held to be unlawful by the courts. So it was a heavy lift by the Obama administration to get this new rule. And, you know, its anchor points are best available science, more collaboration, and to create a new planning process that is more can be more adaptable.
With the new incoming administration,
I don't know what's going to happen. It's hard for me to believe that the new administration is going to go back to the old planning regulations or start with a new planning regulation. I mean, they'd have to go through the entire federal rulemaking process again. They'd have to go through the whole NEPA analysis again. And no one was too happy with the old 1982 regulations. The new regulations, and we have this federal advisory committee that I'm a member of, it has buy-in from about any interest that you can imagine. Tribal representatives and timber and mining, grazing, environmental, outdoor recreation.
I guess the other option would be for Congress to write more specific laws. Do you have concerns about that?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a great question. I think that's what we're going to see in the next year, the big pivot point. We've seen a number of proposed bills that are really radical overhauls of the existing legal structure in terms of NEPA, in terms of national forest management. And so that'll be the question. And I don't know what to expect in that regard. We're at such a pivotal crossroads with federal lands management that goes even beyond the national forests. We've just had one pendulum swing from another for the last 20 years. And you've seen our federal land agencies swing between administrations. And so, yeah, I think planning does offer that potential of having a very grounded, place-specific sort of direction for an agency that has the potential of a lot of local and national buy-in.
What advice do you have for how people can meaningfully be a part of this process?
Well, I'm sure a lot of those citizens that don't have the time to be as engaged as they would like have a proxy of some sort. They're a member of an interest group, and that interest group is at the table. You know, I'm consistently blown away by how sophisticated some of that public input and comment actually is because people know those landscapes. They use those landscapes. Some people earn a living from those landscapes. And so they can write very detailed comments that have to be taken into serious account.
But it really sounds like it boils down to difficult decisions for the individual forest supervisor and their staff. Because the mandate isn't just use the best available science or just use the point of view that gets the most comments. It's balancing public interest with science, with various federal environmental laws. It sounds like a really tough job.
Yeah, you got to thread the needle. It's a tough gig.
Have there been forest plans that have been completely rewritten under the 2012 law yet, or are we still in that process?
The Francis Marion was the first out of the gate and just completed a few months ago in South Carolina. Right after it was the Flathead National Forest in the Sierra Nevada. So it was an interesting contrast to see a couple dozen people that participated in the Francis Marion. I think they received no more than like 24 public comment letters. and contrast that to the thousands of comments that come into the Flathead from all over the country. It's an interesting contrast.
It sounds like the Flathead and some of these forests in Montana are going to be a real opportunity to prove whether or not the 2012 rule is the reform that...
Yeah, absolutely. And the Flathead is in a challenging position because they have grizzly bear issues and lynx issues, among others. So it's a tough national forest.
Do you have a particular outcome or a particular rubric for when you'll know whether the 2012 rule was effective at making forest planning better?
I think the next few years are going to be critical for me. The idea was to let these pilots basically try out the 2012 rule, learn some lessons along the way, and then apply them to this second generation or this next batch of plans that we're seeing, like on the Helena, Lewis, and Clark. And so I think in the next couple of years, we're really going to get a sense of what these plans look like. Every one of our interests at the table will probably look at it through the lens of, you know, the timber industry is looking for certain things and ranching industry and so on. I am really pushing for plans to be as adaptable as possible, but also have plans that provide some political and legal accountability. And most of all, I want plans that mean something. I really believe that if we're going to do planning, then we might as well do planning right. So we can get a lot of these big fights and big battles done at the planning level. And you can have environmental groups and the timber industry agree to some places in terms of suitability or whatever that might be, and some wildlife decisions. We get some of those battles done at the planning level. Hopefully, the project level would be a little easier. You know, the 2012 rule calls this an all lands approach, trying to put individual national forests in their larger social and ecological context. And I think that's a positive step to take a larger sort of macro level look at that unit.
Martin Nye, thanks for joining us at Montana Public Radio.
Oh, thank you very much.
Martin Nye is a professor of natural resource policy and the director of the Boley Center for People and Forests at the University of Montana. I'm Eric Whitney.